think in some ways, what Adobe does is very consistent across the creative side of the business, as well as experience, digital experience part of the business. It's just who is trying to create those great experiences, who's trying to take an idea that they have in their head and actually be able to scale it out.
Marketing Smarts is made possible by Dun & Bradstreet Account-Based Marketing, improving how business-to-business marketers attract, engage, and convert buyers in any economy. This is Smarter ABM. Learn more at dnb.com/ABM.
The smartest marketers from all walks of life, in every industry, talking about the latest trends, opportunities, and challenges. Insights from marketing executives at organizations like National Geographic, IBM, and the Baltimore Ravens, and tips from business authors and experts known around the world. Ways to improve your community's marketing, starting now, right here on the Marketing Smarts Podcast.
Welcome back to Marketing Smarts, an interview series brought to you by Marketing Profs. I'm Carrie O'Shea Gorgone. Thanks for listening. The episode of Marketing Smarts you're about to listen to was recorded live in our Marketing Profs Pro Facebook group. If you're a Marketing Profs Pro member and you haven't checked it out, come on over and join us at mprofs.com/progroup. Today on Marketing Smarts, I'm joined by a special guest co-host, Chris Brogan, the New York Times best-selling author of 9 books, including Trust Agents and The Impact Equation. He's the president of Chris Brogan Media and CEO of Owner Media Group. Chris and I also co-host The Backpack Show, a daily live video show that's all about success. So on this episode of Marketing Smarts, special guest co-host Chris Brogan and I will talk with Lonnie Stark, Vice President of Strategy and Product at Adobe. In her role, Lonnie leads global product strategy, product management, and marketing for Adobe Experience Manager. She has more than 15 years of leadership experience growing innovative technology teams and products that help organizations unleash their creativity and reimagine their business through greater productivity. She's also an accomplished artist who runs her own studio and has her personal website, Stark Insider, where she's interviewed everyone from Apple co-founder Steve Wozniak to Nicole Kidman and Emma Stone. We're going to talk with Lonnie about the intersection of technology, art, and marketing. So here we go. So one of the things that we wanted to talk about was managing an enterprise level team remotely, which like we all got thrown into a year ago, and it was suddenly everybody's working from home. How does that happen without losing some kind of productivity or even company culture, like some kind of team cohesion? How do you keep everything together when everyone's suddenly at home feeling a little bit lonesome?
Yeah, that's a great question. In fact, I think we all kind of plunged into that leading teams. And most of my team has been based in the San Francisco Bay Area. I had some folks that were remote, but nothing like, you know, everybody go back into your homes and just completely be remote. And I think a couple of things that I've learned is one is there isn't the coffee, you know, room kind of conversations. And so I found it useful sometimes in the beginning of meetings to show up a little earlier. And sometimes my, you know, and folks on my team will laugh because I show up sometimes very late to meetings. But when I do show up early to meetings, it's nice to have that banter. The other is that a lot of the tools that are out there now allow for breakout rooms. So you have a team of 50, 60 folks that maybe it's great to have like an all hands, but you also want to have some, you know, smaller teams get together and be able to collaborate, meet and greet, throwing them into breakout rooms and giving them an exercise. It could be silly or productive exercise to be really a great way to get people together. And finally, we use Slack. You know, we that's not been something I've used a lot prior. Maybe people would consider me a little dinosaur in that way, but I was trying to just keep up with email, Twitter, you know, all the other channels. But when we got thrown into remote, having the Slack was really nice to just even, you know, throw someone an emoji, a high five, or be able to have a quick chat about something that needed, you know, some discussion around.
I have a follow-on question about this, which is, you know, as time has gone on and over the years since when you first got there, when you were running sort of a smaller team, to now where you're running global strategy and so many different pieces of the equipment, the system, you now have a lot of people having to report in all the time. How do you make it so it's not endless meetings, but that you feel caught up? Is Slack part of that? How much real time versus not real time? How's that working for you?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think that what I look for is really that everybody is aligned on the strategy and the goals, right? And I think that as long as everyone's aligned on those, then it allows for people to kind of work in their small groups or offline in those areas. Where I spend a lot of time in real-time meetings is where I think that there is a change that needs to happen, or an area where people need to be brought along and also have input into maybe a change in direction or a change in approach that we have. And being obviously in technology, it's not unheard of that those are areas that you know, require quite a bit of time. And I think those are things that are really important to do in real time, because people aren't necessarily going to share those elements asynchronously. And even though we're remote, I think being able to see people's expressions or being able to connect still real time provides a forum where people can voice their thinking and any, you know, of the different ideas that they may have.
At what point did it switch from this is something we're doing like provisionally to this is something we're doing for the foreseeable future? And how did that change maybe your approach with management? A lot of people are willing to tolerate kind of anything short term, but when it becomes clear it's the situation that we're going to have, it changes things.
Yeah, I would say that at Adobe, probably we were first sent home and was like thinking, okay, this is going to be a month, maybe 2 months. And then I would say probably around the 3-4 month perspective, and we were all in the same boat, right? We realized that there wasn't going to be a clean answer to this, and that there was probably quite a bit of unknown, and anyone who was going to say, yep, we're going to return on this date, probably was being more certain than they had the data for. And so I think at that point, you know, it was a time when we sort of at Adobe rolled out also global days off, because we were just finding people were in front of their computer a lot and they were feeling burnt out. People weren't taking vacations because, you know, they're thinking, okay, I'm going to save up my vacation until I can actually go out.
Freaking go to work. Yeah.
Exactly. I'm not going to use it now. And so that was when, you know, thanks to, you know, our head of people resources, Gloria Chen, she had the foresight, and her team had the foresight to put in sort of global days off. And that really just let people take a step back. I know this sounds funny because you're thinking, really? But I started to talk to my team about ergonomics, right? We all came into our home offices. And I don't know about you, but around the 6 month mark, I start to feel like, okay, it's not just the mental state, but also physically being able to make sure you have a place that's ergonomic to work in. And then I think the other aspect of it was being more thoughtful about how information and brainstorming happened on the team. We were starting to get into 2021 planning as an example, right? Middle of the year, and then later into 2020, we were starting to do that kind of planning. And so being able to bring people together and spell out, here's the timelines and here's where we need things and here's, you know, how it's all going to work. Just being more explicit about that, I think, helped ground everyone.
You yourself have a lot of right brain entity in you. You do a lot of painting. You do a lot of art. You get away from work to go do really cool, shiny things, but you also are, you know, it's back at work as well. You know, you're brought in for it. So one thing I'm thinking about is over the years, you know, what Adobe meant to so many people for so many years, it was a pure right brain kind of company. You know, the product you bought went to the right brain person. If somebody had Adobe on their computer, you had a different opinion in your head of who that person was. But of course, it's changed. You know, there's the experience manager. There's all the business stuff there. The let's manage our assets and know where they're, you know, not like the old days where it was final, final, final -4. Like now you have real systems for this. talk about how that's changed over the years just for you, like from being such an artist to being an artist who also is teaching people how to make the business landscape make more sense.
Yeah. You know what's sort of interesting? I think in some ways what Adobe does is very consistent across the creative side of the business as well as experience, digital experience part of the business. It's just who is trying to create those great experiences, who's trying to take an idea that they have in their head and actually be able to scale it out. As an individual, right? As an artist, I have meetings with myself, I guess, if that are your questions, right? It's like the struggle is really internal. It's like, hey, what's my style? What's the idea? What am I trying to communicate? You know, fighting off the thinking of, okay, is this really what I want to express? Or is this what I think others will like? And trying to find your sort of true self and be able to express in a way that kind of engages the viewer, right? And on that front, I think, you know, Adobe provides digital tools for creatives to be able to do that. The same thing has happened with businesses, right? The challenges with a business, if you think about, you know, a company like Coca-Cola or a company like Dun & Bradstreet, right? Or a company like Under Armour, when they want to be creative and they want to do it in a cohesive manner, they're talking about different teams that have to work together. And they're talking about also customers who appreciate the creativity, but also want to make sure that logistically, you know, when I put in an order, the commerce system takes it and that there's security and that there's fidelity, right? It's like, give me all the as a customer, I'm always like, give me all the creativity, but I also want to make sure you're delivering a great product and you have great services. And so when I think about Adobe's digital experience business, it's about providing, just like on the Creative Cloud side, but a experience cloud providing companies with all of the great tools, but also the enterprise governance, security, everything else that makes it possible for companies to be creative. So for companies like Under Armour, who's imagining a campaign, who's imagining new designs of outfits and clothing, especially as we're all working out from home, to be able to get that out there in a coordinated fashion. So while it may seem very different, in some ways, I see it being the same. We're helping companies on the Experience Cloud side become more creative in a way that meets their customers' needs.
So what comes first with you? Like, what's kind of at the forefront, the artist or the product strategist?
Ooh, you know, it's sort of interesting how it's sort of I've evolved, right? I would say when I was really young, I started off being an artist. You know, I was a kid with the Crayola markers and even the books that showed you all step by step. I don't know if you remember of like how to draw a butterfly or here's how you draw a mushroom, right? And I really enjoyed that. But as I was going to school and it was sort of like, you know, I have Asian parents, right? So it's like, okay, what are you going to do that's really going to, you know, make money, that's going to be secure? You know, do I be a doctor, a lawyer? And I'm not, you know, it's a joke, like, but at the same time, there's truth to it, right? And I got into computer science, into product strategy. And I really enjoy that part of it as well, because it's creative in the sense that there's constraints and you need to think about how you overcome that challenge, whatever it is that you're trying to create software for or technology around. And so I've now also really gone and further explored my artistic side as well. And so when you say what comes first, I actually think that for me, when I think along the lines of technology and product strategy and art, it's almost like a swarm of problem, right? If there's something I want to get done, I think that, you know, the more you have different thought patterns of how you approach a problem, then you just have more tool sets that you can use to tackle it. And so I never approach it like, I'm going to look at this from a product strategy perspective, or I'm going to look at it from an artist. What I do is when there's a complex problem, I chip away at it from different angles. So I might be painting and starting to really think about something that way, and something will occur to me, right? Almost like a thread in the background running that will occur to me about a new approach to product strategy. And one example actually that I'm going to use around this is around product strategy and being customer driven. And when you talk to a lot of companies, right, and Adobe being one of them, no company ever says, hey, I don't want to be customer driven. Of course, and everybody, every company thinks they're customer driven, okay? But what's interesting is I had this reflection. I was painting a self-portrait of myself 3.5 years ago. And recently I decided to revisit that exercise because I've been, you know, painting and, you know, drawing like a manic on, you know, when I'm not, you know, doing Adobe stuff and all of that. And so I thought I would revisit this. And I painted something and I was, you know, really, even this weekend, kind of coming down hard on myself. Like I was like, this painting sucks, right? Like, oh, right. And then I pulled up on my iPhone, like the photo I took 3.5 years ago of the self-portrait, I put next to it, and I was really amazed at the difference. And I recall when I did that self-portrait 3.5 years ago, I was like, this is the most amazing thing. Okay, maybe not totally that, but I was like thinking it was pretty damn good. Okay, I'll admit. And when I put it together, I saw that. And so it made me reflect on being customer driven as a company, that you may think you're customer driven, and then as you keep on stretching yourself and practicing and trying out new things, you actually get closer to the goal.
Marketing Smarts is made possible by Dun & Bradstreet, helping B2B organizations automate rapid execution of account-based campaigns that can grow revenue and new business. Dun & Bradstreet ABM helps B2B organizations uncover demand, identify target accounts, and engage through personalized web experiences and always-on omnichannel activations. This is Smarter ABM. Learn more at dnb.com/ABM. Well, I was thinking too about how you're holding yourself to higher standards without having realized that you've done that. And that yeah. People working on your team are probably doing the same thing, you know, thinking I should be doing better. I should be, you know, this should be better. I should be accomplishing more. And they're working under constraints they didn't have before and emotional burdens they weren't carrying before. So I feel like we could all afford to just like ease up a little bit on stuff on ourselves. Really? I mean, think about it.
Carrie's like, oh my gosh, you're right. Because it's you know what? It's a double-edged sword. Because I had someone on my team, right? Just, you know, I had a one-on-one with them and they were saying, you know, I feel like I could have done more to transform the product, or there's more we could have pushed into and all that, right? And, you know, if you know Adobe Experience Manager, which is the product we have, it's, you know, I think there's a lot to be proud of there, right? But I think it's that balance between, you know, easing up on yourself, Carrie, so you're not like so hard on yourself to the point where you're frozen, right? Like you can't act because you just are so paranoid or so like critical that you're like, this is depressing. I don't want to work on it. But also on the other hand, pushing yourself so that you are holding yourself to a higher standard. And I think it's that dynamic that gets you further than you currently are. And it's a balance you have to strike. And I think some of the folks I admire who are super successful are probably the hardest people on themselves, but that's why they're super successful.
I wonder if that goes back to your coaching, you know, your coaching of your people. If you don't execute, if you don't produce, then you don't get the opportunity to iterate. Your point about seeing your self-portrait from 3 years ago lets you say, oh, well, I fixed these strokes, or look at how I do this differently, or wow, I pay a lot more attention to light, like how it bounces off my glasses in this one. I wasn't doing that before. And you sort of pick those details out. And even watching a summit this last year, watching Annika Jones, the embroidery artist who was doing this incredible fabric art where it was like self-portraits and not self-portraits, portraits and art and activism art with embroidery. You think, well, how do we get there, right? I wonder if your guidance to your team is to execute and experiment and iterate. And how do you give them the sort of training wheels or bumper car or whatever we want to say it to keep them from wrecking one of your good clients or your best customers at or something like that?
Yeah, I would say that's absolutely a great observation. And it's one of my favorite sayings is vision without execution is hallucination, right? By Thomas Alva Edison. And so you're right. You have a vision and you need to sort of execute on it. I think that part of that is having periodic checkpoints, right? And having those I call sort of safety valves along the way. So it's not like, hey, just go execute and just go freeform, but say, okay, what are things that we could do that really tests out this hypothesis or allows us to try something? And what's the risk if we do it, right? And sometimes there's no risk, or sometimes if there is a real risk to a customer or to some initiative we have, then it's sort of saying, well, how do we put some bumpers around that? What are risk mitigations that we could take so that we are able to try it out and figure things out? And the other part of it, I think, that's so akin around product strategy and art is that there's no real right answer, right? Meaning that there isn't some answer in the back of a textbook that says 1 + 1 = 2. You got it. And that's it. And that's right. Like product strategy, you know, some of the things you come up with might take 2, 3, 4 years to fully realize. And the strategy doesn't sit on its own. It's not like some isolated thing that you created around, you know, the idea. And you can like a, you know, physics or chemistry experiment, control all the other variables and then be like, aha, that product strategy is right because we control for every other variable. You come up with an idea and then it's like you execute, you're in there like a game, and it might be not the idea might be fine. It might have been this part of the execution or that part of it. And because of that, some of getting to a better state of the product, of a piece of artwork or everything else, is actually going and driving down the road, figuring it out and having those experiences and adjusting for it, right? And so I think that's a big important part, because sometimes I think people hold strategy like it's this holy grail. And then either they get paralyzed because they're like, hey, I can't get to it because how the hell do I get from where I am to that? And they spend so much time thinking of the perfect strategy when the strategy maybe just needs to be 70% right. And if you jump in and execute against it, maybe that's all you need, right? Maybe like there's no perfect product strategy, right? And most of it is just the hustle and getting to that answer.
Yeah, you can change things later. I love people act like it's got to be perfect or it's all over. One of the things that's really complicated, I think, for a company like Adobe is that the people who are going to use some of these solutions you come up with can be really creative, amazing, artistic people, not necessarily the same people that are going to sign the check for the thing. So your buying committee is pretty big and people have different concerns all along the kind of buyer's journey. So how are you addressing both the needs of the person who's going to ultimately use it and maybe really super wants it, and the person up the chain a little bit who's going to have to write the check but doesn't understand how cool it is that with just a stroke of an electronic, you know, stylus, you can change the direction of wind in their animated content, you know, stuff like that.
You know what's very interesting? I said something to my team once, which is that the business, like the decision makers, may make the decision to purchase or buy the product, but it's the users, the individual users, to decide whether you stay or not, right? And so I think that it's both. And when I think about that, there's two aspects. One is that focusing on the design, right? And I think we need to do even more of this, is focusing on the user design for the folks that are in the tools day in and day out, and making sure that that is a great experience. That's one aspect. I think the second is that there are concerns that span beyond the individual user that the enterprise has, such as security, such as workflows, such as operations, right? That they need to be able to allow for individuals to have the freedom, But then, so for example, someone like you were mentioning, you know, creating either great content for a mobile app or for a website, or being able to just be able to work in Creative Cloud and not think about what are the access control rights on a piece of content, or what are the version, or what are the rights around it, right? And just be able to create them, you know, Photoshop, in Illustrator, in Spark, and be able to, you know, XD, and be able to have that content and just have it be invisible, this idea of where it's going to, right? But obviously for a company, they care that that content and that, that you know, great content is controlled, especially if, you know, you're the artist or you're the designer working on the next model for a car company, right? Those are things, or the next version, I guess, of the iPhone or something like that, right? Something that requires to have that level of control. And so having that still move into a controlled environment, like a digital asset management solution, is really important for the overall company and part of, you know, the criteria for someone who's buying the product. So I think it's thinking through what matters to both audiences and making sure it's there, because both elements are necessary. If you have something that's highly controlled and everything else that the business likes, that's a digital asset management solution, but it's hard for people to actually use it, then, you know, they're going to find ways around the system, and then the whole thing falls apart.
You also produce Stark Insider. So you can go to starkinsider.com to check out what we're talking about. What's interesting there is it really mixes and matches a bunch of your tastes and interests. And, you know, you had said that about in putting it together, you want to make sure it was broad enough that you could come back to it over and over again. But I mean, really broad. Like, we talk about anything from Peloton to what Olympus is doing with their cameras and whatnot. And as I went down the rabbit hole a little bit, it was really interesting about, in a world where everybody, you know, you can get all the megapixels you ever wanted, and you can get all the, you know, the digital effects you ever wanted, the new people who own Olympus said, well, you know, it'd be cool. What if we stuck to 4:3 in micro formats? And what if we didn't go for, like, they just went in this completely people who want a second camera in their pocket way. What does that do to you? What does gathering that information do for you? And what does it do for everything else you're doing by just, you know, in the cracks between Adobe and all that? What's it mean to Lonnie Stark?
Really, Stark Insider is a place to explore. It's kind of like a creative lab. When I think about, you know, the cracks, like you're saying, the cracks between Adobe or everything else, like, I've been at Adobe for over 20 years, right? And so that's a long time. Everyone has multiple facets to who they are. And I think something that's really important to everyone is the ability to fully express who they are. And so if you think about Adobe, that gives a lot of range in terms of ways I can express myself and ways that adds value to our, you know, our customers and everyone else. And everything else, I would say, is Stark Insider. I wouldn't say that there is a division, because when Adobe started, they were into fonts, and then they got into, you know, Creative Cloud and all the creative tools. And with Experience Cloud, it's been all around digital and web. And so I found a lot of the things I've done around Stark Insider has given me different perspectives on what I do at Adobe, and vice versa.
So I have a question as we roll out of this for the nice folks at Marketing Profs and beyond. Mom and Dad wanted you to be a doctor and a lawyer. 20 years of Adobe success and just continuing to roll it on. Are they good with you now? Like, is it okay that you're an Adobe expert? Are you still like hoping to get your rotations done so you can be a better medical doctor soon?
No, I think they're good. I think actually Adobe, she gets. But I think the art thing, she's just coming around to it.
Well, we know about StarkInsider.com, Adobe.com. Is there anywhere else people should go to learn more about the cool things that you're doing?
I also have another website called AtelierStark.com, which is my artwork. But it's all connected. It's all just different personas. I think you only have one life, so you might as well just be everything you ever wanted to be.
Thanks, Lonnie.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks again to Dun & Bradstreet Account-Based Marketing for sponsoring this episode of Marketing Smarts. Thanks to special guest co-host Chris Brogan. A Big thank you to Signature Tones for creating our custom music. You can check them out at signaturetones.com. And as always, thank you for listening here to the very end. This has been the Marketing Smarts Podcast, brought to you by Marketing Profs. I'm Carrie O'Shea Gorgone. Talk with you again soon.